When we moved from Aruba to Sweden, we weren't really sure what to do with our home in Aruba. We didn't want to sell the space that had so many memories and offered us a place to stay when we returned to the island. But what else could we do after moving internationally? That's when my husband came up with a brilliant plan. We can become hosts on Airbnb. Since starting this, I can officially say my husband had the best idea ever. The process of getting our property on Airbnb was so easy. We were able to ask other hosts for tips and got a lot of great feedback. And actually, we still get tons of good feedback and we're constantly improving our space. And Airbnb is really flexible. You just choose the dates you want to host. So if you don't have a full-time rental property like us, that's perfect too. Hosting on Airbnb is great for anyone who frequently travels or has the extra space or has a seasonal house or even someone who always goes away at the same time of year for family traditions or work events. We all know the cost of living is excessive right now, so you can get more out of your space when you host on Airbnb. The added income has been so important for my family and has given my husband a project to manage that he genuinely enjoys. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. We are coming up to the end of January right now, but it's still important that we stay hydrated throughout the day, even in the midst of winter. I myself am a huge sparkling water fan, and I'm so excited to introduce my new favorite sparkling water, La Croix. La Croix sparkling water is a calorie, sweetener, and sodium innocent beverage with nothing artificial added in it at all. Each water is all natural, non-GMO, and environmentally friendly, and flavored with fruit essences. There are over 2 dozen mouth-watering flavors like key lime, passion fruit, and mango. And there's specialty and bolder La Croix curate flavors like blackberry cucumber and pineapple strawberry. My all-time favorite is the apple berry and the classic grapefruit one. These drinks are so refreshing and delicious, I might just be a little addicted. What is your favorite La Croix flavor? Share it with me on Twitter using the hashtag La Croix Water, spelled L-A-C-R-O-I-X. For more information and to find your own new favorite La Croix flavor, join the La Croix community at La Croix Water on Instagram or check out lacroixwater.com. That's lacroixwater.com, LACROIXwater.com. Hi, and welcome to another episode of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. I am so excited to introduce a super duper mega special guest on the show today. Someone I've been sort of badgering to join us forever. One of my all-time favorite musicians, Nako Bear. Nako is an artist, activist, musical prophet, and the frontman of the band Nako and Medicine for the People. And his heart-expanding lyrics and incredible voice have moved the lives of people from all corners of the world. His music has been an instrumental part of my own journey and my own healing, and I am just so incredibly happy to have him on the show. Welcome to the show, Nako!
Oh, aloha. Thanks for having me, Rachel. So good to be here with you.
Aloha. I'm so happy to talk to you. It's so nice to hear your voice.
Oh, yeah. It's good to hear your voice, too. It's been a little while since we've seen each other, and you've since then brought a beautiful life into the world, and so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. A lot has happened, actually. Yeah, last time we saw each other was LA, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Eating food somewhere. Yeah. Feels like another lifetime. Everything since I had baby feels like, I don't know, like a past life somehow.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago. But so in spirit of the name of this podcast and speaking from the heart, how are you? What's going on in your life?
Well, I'm doing all right, you know. I think that I've been going through one of the hardest times in my life, to be truly honest, and it feels good to be now. I'm on a 2-month break and taking some time to literally carry the water and chop the firewood, I guess you'd say. And sort of take some time, some serious alone time, to really navigate through my own process of saying goodbye to the old archetype of that once was living, and of you know we all go through these things, young men, young women, and where you have to sort of address the inner child that that potentially won't allow the adult to fully mature and rule your life. And so I think that in astrology terms, some people call that like your Saturn return. And so I go like, well, why did Saturn never leave me?
I'm like, isn't that supposed to be every 28 years or something?
Yeah, well, but for men, it's a little different, right? Like for women, it's a bit earlier. And for men, we kind of go through it from like 29, 30, 31, and I'm about to be 32 in a couple weeks. And so, you know, I thought when I hit 30 and I went through some pretty hard things, I was like, okay, I'm good till the next like 12 years. And then 31 rolled around and it was like, you're not even close to being done, buddy. And so big transformations. I mean, like, you know, a lot of it, I guess, has to do with the fact that I work really hard, and I've grown into this role as an artist, as a musician, as a I guess what my mom and I like to call a social worker through music, right? she's a social worker here in Portland. She's been through so much in her life, and through that experience of her life, she's been able to transform that challenge and pain and just hard struggle into a form of teaching, and been able to now share her healing through, you know, working for the state and helping underprivileged families and lower income families work through their issues. And so I guess the way that I often have sort of viewed what I do is essentially, you know, helping people connect with themselves more, and help them navigate their inner work so that their outer work reflects who they truly are, right? So I guess a part
of it's a good term for you, I think, social work through music. It's, I would say, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. You know, navigating all the labels, right, and trying to identify specifically what it is I feel like I'm offering the world. So the last year, I you know, I ended up kind of amidst a very rigorous schedule of touring, I was advocating for numerous projects that were all appropriate and also all very dear to my heart, some of which I'd been on annual campaigns with, and they were all successful campaigns that were all supported by our medicine tribe, our communities across the nation and across the world. In doing all that, and through being in a relationship for the first time in years, and having all these things sort of happening, including also navigating an industry, and that's a whole other conversation to dive into of
right.
the construct of systems and the construct of I guess really, I mean, industry is always sort of a very similar format when you really dig into it. But a for-profit industry that, you know, really
you have
makes
to take
difficult.
Part of in one way or another.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unavoidable.
Yeah. Like
yeah.
You have to take part in it in order to survive, which is such an annoying yet, you know, it's a task that for someone who's an Aquarius, who's a futurist, as a person who like in my younger years also was so anti-establishment, you know, and now have softened quite a bit in understanding the system, even though it's quite oppressive and it doesn't allow sort of this against the normal grain, riding the edge of something potentially conscious. It doesn't want it to survive necessarily. And, you know, that could be said for any artist.
Any industry, any art, yeah.
Exactly. That's...
I wonder if you're not part of changing that just a little bit. But before I get into some questions, so we can go a little bit deeper into that, I asked mm-hmm. through social media a couple hours ago if anybody had any questions for you that they could ask them, and then maybe I'd connect right now. And the overwhelming amount of messages that came in, so many were not with questions about, you know, asking you details about your life or anything like that, but it was just overwhelming amounts of gratitude. Really, so many people wrote in and say, I don't have a question, I just want to thank him because his music carried me through really difficult times in my life. So many of those specific messages of just gratitude. So I want to start off and pour some of that your way, just so you know, your people all over the world are just in this moment really grateful that for the art that you make.
Mahalo. I'm really happy to hear that. It's always a good feeling to know that you've helped someone move through whatever that they're going through, you know?
Do you sometimes feel like do you sometimes forget that? I mean, you're living this life, you're making music, changing lives, but from far away, do you sometimes feel, I don't know, does it get lonely making music? Do you sometimes forget that, okay, this will be touching the depths of someone's heart, but, you know, you're not maybe present with them in that moment? I find that sometimes absolutely. With my writing, sometimes people tell me, oh, you know, I connected so deeply through this. But I sometimes have a hard time deeply making that connection if I'm not in the room with a person, you know? So what's that like for you? Because this is what you do every day.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think that, you know, when it does get lonely. And I think that there's a weird connection between the channel that, you know, we create from and the way that we react to it once it actually gets out there. and I want to say it's human, but I'm not sure exactly what it is. it is an odd thing because I think that perhaps in the developing years of putting the music out that people have become so familiar with, that I had been so reluctant to doing it, that I maybe sort of inadvertently decided in my subconscious to not take on any of the vibration or the whatever it was that people were putting back on me, whether it was gratitude or love or joy or whatever it is, like I would receive some of that, but in its magnitude, I wouldn't necessarily carry it all. So a lot of times people would say, how do you deal with, you know, all these people who love you, and how does that affect you? And does that change how you write? Does that change how you live? And I think that absolutely, like as a young person, my ego certainly took a lot of that and ran with it. But in hindsight now, when I look back on those, on earlier times and how I'm translating it now, I can see that I wasn't fully aware of myself yet. And you know what I mean? To take what I was receiving and understand it or even like mold it a bit or whatever you do with it. Because I wasn't really comfortable with myself yet. You know, when people say they love you or that they, you know, that they care about you or that you've done something for them, it can be hard to receive that when you yourself perhaps don't feel worthy of that or understand your, you know, if you don't have a good relationship with your self-worth or you don't have a great relationship with how you love yourself. I think I think oftentimes it becomes a shrug of the shoulders. or you're welcome, and kind of like, wow, here yet again is another story of someone saying something like that to me, and then I don't know how to necessarily like take that in its fullness, you know.
Receiving is hard.
Exactly. Yeah, receiving is very hard. So no matter how big and loving that person might be and how incredible that person is, you know, it's a true testament to understand the frequency of those people, you know.
Yeah. You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl. Did you know that the average family visits 5 totally different websites before booking their vacation rental? Digging into that many sites can make travel planning way more tedious and time-consuming than it has to be. Spend less time planning your trip and more time in the present moment with Tripping.com, the world's number one site for vacation rentals. Vacation rentals offer flexibility, perks, and amenities that hotels do not normally offer, like multiple bedrooms, backyards, hot tubs, free Wi-Fi, even fully stocked kitchens so you can plan and cook your own meals. While on the road, I love being able to make my own meals and create a space that feels like home, which is why I love going the vacation rental route. Instead of getting lost in the black hole of travel planning online, Tripping.com makes finding that perfect home away from home quick and easy. Spend less time planning and more time relaxing with Tripping.com, trusted by millions of travelers and featured by the New York Times, Travel and Leisure, Forbes, and many more. With Tripping.com, one search lets you filter, compare, and sort over 10 million available properties on trusted sites like VRBO, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, and more. Don't wonder if you're getting the best deal on that winter cabin or that beachfront home. You'll save an average of 18% per night by booking your vacation with Tripping.com. So don't forget, if you want to save time and money while booking the perfect vacation rental for your next trip, head to Tripping.com/yogagirl today. That's TRIPPING.com/yogagirl. Tripping.com/yogagirl. Want to know one of my favorite sounds? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language, I guarantee it'll be one of your new favorite sounds too. Be a better you with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you have learned in the real world. I absolutely love using Babbel. Their convenient courses have helped both me and my husband learn real live conversation skills in a different language. He's learning Swedish, of course, and I've been trying my hand at French again. It is so easy to learn how to order food, how to ask for directions, speak to merchants, and all without having to consult language apps while on vacation, or in my husband's case, living here in Sweden with me. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/yoga. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/yoga, spelled BABBEL.com/yoga. Rules and restrictions may apply. I have such a personal connection to your music, and I know so many people do. I mean, all music is personal, of course, and it's very subjective in that it becomes what we make it, sort of. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure some of the music you put out there is perceived in thousands of different ways, but a lot of people, somehow, because we met for the first time, I mean, this was 2014, we were in Costa Rica at Envision Festival. It's the first time I ever saw you perform, and I had one of those moments, because I love music of all different kinds, but I'm not a big concert person, and I wasn't really a big festival person. I never had like a wow, intense, earth-shattering moment of live music ever, really, in my life. And then I saw you perform. I was there with my best friend, and I had that first moment where my heart was really cracked open through music and through your lyrics, and of course through the community of everybody present together. You know, there's something so I had this like little crack open there. And then I was raving the whole evening about this music and, oh my God, this band and, oh my God, these lyrics and, oh, I have to play this in yoga class and holy shit, like life-changing stuff. And I never had that really before, which for me was such a strange thing. And then the next day, I mean, we spoke about this, I think, once or twice, but we were in this hammock, me and my best friend, and then she goes, oh, hey, there's that music man, like your music man, he's over there. And then you walked under us and she touched your head and she was like, hey, music man, what's up? And we said hi, and that was that, you know. And then this is such a, you know, intricate part of my story, because one of your songs, Black as Night, became like our anthem for that festival. It became our thing, our song. We sang it all the time. And then 2 weeks later, my best friend passed away, you know. And I had that song was like the echo of our whole experience. Like our whole friendship was in those words that you wrote. Connected. I mean, when you wrote them, they were about something, you know, very personal to you. But to me, it became this this kind of survival chant that I kept repeating to myself. Like, I believe in the good things coming. And I shared that with the world. And I remember sometime, I mean, I had like one of my worst nights early on. I was playing this song repeatedly on again and again and again in the night. And I tweeted you, and I never in my life, like, this is the first time in my whole life that I ever like reached out to someone that I didn't know. I was never, you know, I never felt connected to, I don't know. There was never like a celebrity or an artist or a person that I was like, oh my God, I'm so inspired. I never had that. But I had that moment of like, oh my God, whoever wrote these lyrics, like maybe there's like a little bit of gold like he could help me with. I don't know. Maybe he could help carry me through this wave of pain or of grief. And I reached out and you wrote back and we chatted for a little bit. But because I've been on the other end of that, and I know it's such a different space, because how can you receive that? I mean, you wrote that song years earlier, and, you know, it's received in a totally different way than the intention of how you wrote the song. I guess what I'm trying to say is that receiving that, okay, you helped carry me through grief, or your music helped heal a part of me. It's a really big thing to hold for someone else. So I mean, for you, since this is the outpouring you get all the time.
And I think that whether it's, I mean, I guess in relation to, I was thinking about how interesting it is that music, you know, really does crack you open in a way that you could be very surprised by your actions, how it can shift your energy, of course, and how it turns into mantras, and, you know, and how it really does help you understand yourself better, I guess, in those circumstances. But I was also considering the fact that, like, you know, even that song, you know, and as you were telling the story to me again, I was thinking about where I was when I wrote it. And then I was thinking about how it doesn't, for me at least, doesn't matter how long it's been since I've played a song or how many times I've played a song. More often than not, I find that when I bring them back and I play them in different ways, or I bring it or just play it again, I find new meaning in them for each different day that I play them. And I was thinking about how, you know, we just played for New Year's Eve in Denver for three nights, and we brought back some older songs. And I was thinking about those, about how people have, you know, been transformed through different stories of, you know, the music and the different songs, whether it's Aloha Ke Akua or, you know, Black as Night with I Believe in Good Things Coming, and then being able to share them, because they're still relevant, you know, mantras for people in that sense, you know, and still deeper truths. And I marveled at times to think that something so personal for me can be so transformational for another person, and that is truly a gift, you know. And so thanks for sharing that story again. It's really, I remember that moment when she reached down and touched my head, and I remembered who that young boy was who was standing, who walked beneath you at that time, and I marvel at his capacity to do what he was doing then, without knowing what I know now.
It isn't that always the case?
Oh my goodness. It is.
It is always the case. And I love how, you know, life will hit you with a bunch of shit and you're like, oh my God, I've made it through this.
Oh my God.
You know, I'm solid now. I know everything. Mm-hmm. I have learned. I have overcome. And then life is like, just a little bit left. Here we go. Here's the more shit for you to grow with.
Yeah, or also like the creator will take everything away from you and then offer you a great gift and say, all right, here's your second chance, you know?
Beautifully. I mean,
and I'm speaking direct. I like looking out my window and speaking directly to you as if you knew what I was talking about.
No.
And
I was like, I deeply know what you're talking about. Actually, I'm on that same couch in a different way, you know. But I think, you know, something about this specifics of this, you know, of being able to write music that helps carry people through dark times. I mean, there's something so beautifully purposeful in that. I mean, you're not just making music to whatever for the sake of making music or making music to make money or to be famous or I don't know why people make music. I like to think that there's always that spiritual component of it. But I find that there's something really special about the way you write that's able to touch people in those hard times. Would you want to share a little bit with us, you know, any adversity that you've overcome that has made you able to, in such a beautiful way, touch on that place? Because I don't think everybody has that ability.
Yeah. I think there's two stories that came to mind just immediately. And one of them, I guess, is the most recent you know, in the short story of it being that I recognize now that shadow work is real stuff, right? And I kind of played that off for a long time, thinking that I had any kind of major shadow work to deal with. And now, as I sit here daily working through my stuff and, you know, and bringing ritual into my life more so that I can create discipline, because part of my inconsistency is having consistency for myself to become more grounded. And I think that as I've realized that I'm not exempt from any of the outer world's healing, and when I say that, I'm talking about the imbalance of the feminine and the masculine in the world. And when we look at the most recent, you know, year of politics in our country, in America, and you look at the most recent, you know, 4 to 6 months of what was trending in the news, it was these men that would come forth or be accused daily. You know, it seemed like someone had to resign or whatever it was in the media of men who were abusing their power, right?
The Me Too movement you're talking about, yeah.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm specifically speaking to like the men, you know, that were accused or, you know, found guilty or whatever it is that they were doing. You know, it's just men, right? Men and their abuse of power to women. And, and you know, if it's, you know, obviously at the top, if you consider that the top, you know, then obviously it speaks volumes to all men, right? And that wound being so deep of what, you know, what in our society has caused men to over and over again, you know, abuse that power and have this expectation, and do these things. And it's when you look at that kind of action, you go, okay, well, that's a very easy, you know, reflection of how we treat our Mother Earth, right? And when I've considered my own life of abuse of power, of letting my ego be in control, and the inconsistency that I've had in my life towards being fully transparent, hiding from myself, you know, all along, and letting the child who has, when he was a kid, you know, the trauma that I never really wanted to address, of being separated from my mother and being born in this certain way, which was part two that I was going to talk about, that I kind of always would say like, oh yeah, I probably have abandonment issues, you know, like, but then I never really like went there with it, you know, and did the work with it to sort of release that, you know, because I kind of didn't think that was necessary or I didn't want to make time for it. And now that I consider all of the relationships and non-relationships that I've had in my life, and all the running away that I did, you know, as my mom, so kind of at one point she so aptly put it, and I jest when I say this, but she's like, have you ever considered your own trail of tears? And I was like,
your own trail of tears. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I'm pretty hard on myself, you know, and I think that at times you have to be in order to like really reconcile with your past. And I think that we all have to recognize that, you know, you're the only person really that's going to be keep yourself accountable, you know, for your path. Right. and I think that I've, as an Aquarius, as a person who is like so completely air, like I have four planets in Aquarius, I have like no earth in my chart. I am all air. I'm constantly that person that like is running off the path, you know, to make my own. And then I turn around and there's all these people following me and I'm like, why are you guys following me? I have no idea where I'm going. And they are like, great, let's go there. And I'm like, okay, I guess we're going. you know, I have to kind of bring myself down to earth quite a bit and say, listen, buddy, you know, this kind of behavior is not, it's not how they do things around here. You gotta consider everybody else too, you know? And so I've been going through an interesting time of looking at my wounds and how I've wounded other people because of my lack of caring for those wounds and healing them. And it was it's kind of shameful, to be honest, when I look at the work that men have to do in the world and on this planet and in this dimension, and I consider the fact that like no man is exempt from, you know, feeding that beast, and you know, I'm no better than anyone else.
But it's such a hard thing. I find most, at least the men in my life, when I'm having these conversations now, you know, in the wake of all of this being brought to light, I think it, or at least it seems like from the man's perspective, it's a really hard conversation to carry now.
Absolutely.
You know,
you are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl. When it comes to bra shopping, it's all about finding the right fit for you, something that is much easier said than done. After too many years of wearing uncomfortable and poorly fitting bras and just thinking that's the way you had to be, I finally found a lingerie brand I actually look forward to putting on every day. Third Love. Third Love has changed the industry. Did you know that other bra brands usually only carry 15 sizes? Well, Third Love has 60 sizes from AA through G, including half cups. If you never heard of half cups, it's because no one else offers them. Using thousands of women's real measurements and super smoothing memory foam, Third Love creates bras that fit better and that feel great. There is a perfect bra out there for everyone. Go to thirdlove.com/heart for 15% off of your first order. All you have to do is answer a few simple questions on the Fit Finder quiz, and you'll be instantly matched with an expertly recommended bra for your unique size and shape, all from the comfort of your own home, so you'll never have that awkward fitting room experience again. Third Love believes in these bras so much that if your new Third Love bra is not your new favorite, well, you can easily return or exchange it for free. This year, make the change that will change the way you think about bras. For listeners in the U.S., go to thirdlove.com/heart right now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off of your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/heart for 15% off. thirdlove.com/heart. Do you have any, I mean, as someone who is, you know, doing this work right now, because I think I like to believe that there's a lot of men out there who are kind of, you know, slightly uncomfortable or very uncomfortable in this conversation, and who just don't know how to carry it forward from the man's point of view. But we can't just talk about this as women, you know, it has to be.
Totally. I think there has to be. There has to be, you know, you can have your women's circles, you can have your men's circles, and then you need to like integrate. And, you know, and I think that, it's a really tricky place to come from, because you can say, well, you know, in our native cultures, we often like want to say, well, let's bring our elders in, let's have them talk. But, you know, more often than not, there is a history of misogyny in, you know, our elder circles that, has not been healed yet either. So it's a really, and, you know, in our traditional cultures as well, are the way that a lot of our traditional cultures have been formatted is completely all balanced, imbalanced, with the masculine being completely in charge and, you know, the women, you know, being subservient to the rule. And that makes me feel really uncomfortable. And it's actually also a really tricky place to talk about, because when you look at our traditions, a lot of them have been shaped potentially quite unknowingly by, you know, the most recent generations, have been shaped by Western ways. And when you go farther back, you sort of like start to realize that there was much more of a balance of power, whether that's like women leading ceremonies for both men and women, or, you know, obviously more women in power back then. And then over time, it's sort of like, with you know, with the onslaught of Western way, sort of like started to shift, and now we think that is the only way that is tradition. So, it's a really tricky place to speak from, especially as you're saying, when, you know, what seems to be the majority of men aren't looking at, like, you know, the Me Too movement, or looking at the Women's March, or looking at the, you know, the men coming out and having to admit to these things. They're not looking at themselves and thinking like, oh gosh, I guess I'm probably a part of that. Or they're not looking at it and saying like, wow, these women are right. Potentially it's like, how do we step forward in a good way with supporting our women in this rebalancing of things, you know, starting from at home. And I don't have the answers for you. You know, I think
I'm not expecting you to, but I think having this conversation as men, you know, together with women, I think it's the only way. And I try to do it. Absolutely. I try to do it with my husband at home and with friends, but it seems like it's, at least in this moment in time, like everyone is so afraid to say the wrong thing, or so afraid to, you know, what kind of ghosts do I have, or what kind of skeletons do I have in my mm-hmm. closet? Am I able to speak of this? I'm not sure, you know, but I think we have to all air all this shit out mm-hmm. and continue
yeah,
having this conversation.
It's going to be hard. And I think that the hardest thing right now to do is not have your feelings hurt. And, you know, if you can let it roll off your shoulders and not take it personally, and then take things personally, you know,
it's all personal. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's like, not to feel like it's directed directly at you, but to recognize that as a whole, there's a responsibility we have to each other to see this work through. And who knows, you know, it's like, I would like to say, you know, that for me personally, it's like it's a daily thing in my personal life that I hope reflects in my work, because, it's forthcoming because it is very important. And it also, I feel like, dictates how we advocate, to our children and for our great mother, of course, as well, because it really does boil down to how we treat the planet, based on how we treat each other.
Exactly. So, because you have some very strong, powerful women in your life, right?
I do. And
so has this shaped, do you think, how you're able to carry this conversation now? I mean, are you having this conversation with your moms, for instance?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I feel like I have far more very opinionative, strong, resilient women in my life that really help me identify, you know, my own dysfunction, you know, and with my mom, like a year ago, she's like, let's go to therapy. And I was like, I don't got no problems. I was like, I'm not going.
Based on what?
I'm not going to go to therapy. She just, I was like, what are you talking about?
Just on a whim? Or then, was it something specific happening?
Nah, well, she was going through a lot, and like she wanted me to go talk about those things, and she was sort of having like a relapse of trauma, and it was, you know, as you know, trauma takes a long time sometimes to really come back around, and she was going through that time, and I wasn't around much then, and now I've moved back to Oregon, and I'm much more closer to her, and we spend a lot more time with, I spend a lot more time with both my moms, and my birth mother and I are, now we haven't gone yet, but we've scheduled our first like mother son therapy session together with her, with a counselor. And I've got my own counseling that I'm about to start doing.
For anyone listening who doesn't know how it, could you share just really briefly how you have two magical moms?
Oh yeah. I lucked out. So, I was born, I was born through a human trafficking experience that, my mother went through when she was 14 years old. And my grandmother was a troubled person, to say the least. And, it was trafficking her youngest four children. And so I was a result of that. And then my mother gave me up for adoption when I was 9 months, and I was adopted by this beautiful, loving family, you know. I'm trying to explain this. I'm a Native American, Puerto Rican, Filipino, and Chamorro, and grew up in a all white family in a very white suburban household, neighborhood, you know, very, you know, Republican, conservative Christian environment. And, you know, and I feel like this, when I say that and I consider the story too, I think a lot of people get confused thinking that I came from a really hard childhood, which I didn't. The family that raised me did everything in their power to you know, create a safe and loving environment, which they did. And you know, as any kid would say, you know, like, oh gosh, my parents this, my parents that, when I was this age, and you know, and sure, I have all those stories too. But it wasn't because of the fact that I was adopted, and it didn't really get hard until I got into my later teens and eventually found my mother on the internet and rolled down the street about 20 minutes from where I grew up and actually met her when I was 21. For the last 12 years of my life, I've spent getting to know my mom's family, my brothers and sisters. I have two sisters, two brothers on my mom's side, and then many nephews and nieces. And then on my dad's side, I did 3 years later discover my birth father's family. And they had no idea that I was even a thing. And so they were quite surprised to discover the eldest son. And so I spent many years getting to know them. And then about, what was it? Maybe a year or two after I'd met them. When I first met them, I had discovered that my birth father had passed away in 1994. And And it wasn't long after that that my adoptive father also passed away from cancer. So now it's just my mom's. But the lessons and, you know, the ongoing understandings that I have of both my fathers and the teachings both of them left me, you know, in some ways haunt me, but in other ways, you know, are really important for me to navigate, you know, the lessons and specifically, you know, just speaking of now. So it's been a long journey, to say the least.
But it's incredible. I think, I mean, every family has its things. And of course, your past, you have more trauma than most people. But the fact that you're all three of you now talking and going mm-hmm. to therapy and doing this work all together, I think that's pretty, pretty epic. I mean,
and you know, I feel like I'm not alone. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of folks, of course, that have pretty wild and nuts, you know, stories. But, you know, I think that the gift that I have to share that story through music, is, you know, in particular, you know, brings it out, right, in a different way, that's translatable to people. And I think that, you know, there, the authenticity of that message and then the genuine, like, you know, way that I write about it, I think is really the key to how it's been able to be translated by folks. And so, yeah, so there's that.
Do you think it goes around so that you make music and then your moms are able to listen to it and then healing comes back around their way as well?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I think my mom, like my birth mother, I feel like is finally sort of in a good space with it. She wasn't that, like when we first met, she was like, oh, that's great. You play music. And then, you know, as some of the songs started coming out, she would like say, wow, that's really heavy. I'm glad that you wrote that. And then she went through a period, I think, when her trauma was kind of coming back around, where she couldn't listen to it. It was too much, you know? And then now she's in a really good place with it, to the point where we're both considering how powerful it could be for us to be like a fighting duo, where you rarely see in the human trafficking movement, in the anti-human trafficking movement, you rarely see like a survivor and a survivor's son working together to share the healing part of the journey, you know? You know, I mean, it's a huge thing, black market, like, you know, sex trade, you know what I mean? And it's not something you really hear people talking about that much, especially like as far as in like our sector of the world. And then my adopted mom, the mom that I grew up with, you know, she's mellowed out a lot in the last decade. And you know, she doesn't ask many questions, but I know that she understands me, which is a lot to say considering where her and I both came from in the beginning of our journey together. So I'm really proud of her. She's, you know, she's very, very devoutly Christian, and I've learned to really appreciate her faith, and really see her for who she is in a good way. And so we don't talk much about my songs. She always wants mm-hmm. to be able to read the lyrics, because she's like, well, you know, I'm old, and I don't understand all the things you're saying. You say it so fast. And I'm like, all right, fair enough. So I always try and make sure, like, I print the lyrics after her so she can read them, right? You know, they both have very different reactions to the music. And I think that, you know, sharing me with the world has been an interesting journey for both of them.
It's a hard, hard journey, but it's a beautiful one.
You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
Hey, business owner, do you have big goals for your company in the new year? Are you in need of great talents to reach those goals, but you're short on time? Well, you don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resume to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools, smarter tools. What you need is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. ZipRecruiter even reviews every application to identify your top candidates so you never miss a great match. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on the right candidate finding you, it finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidate with immediate results. Right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. That's ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. I mean, it's pretty clear to say that by sharing it and by doing the work, you are collectively, everybody doing this work, we help each other. It gets lighter once it's spoken. But the thing about trauma is it comes back. And I haven't figured that out myself. I come from a past with a lot of death and depression and suicide and heavy shit. And sometimes I don't know. I feel like the more I talk about it, the lighter I feel. But I'm also keeping that door open a little bit. So sometimes I'm like, oh, can I just close the door to all this past shit and just like open up a new chapter? And then I think I have, and then something comes back and opens up again. Probably it's just a lifetime thing, healing. I mean, it's not a linear thing that you're one day done with.
I think we just become more resilient, and we just become more, accustomed to addressing it, and we just get better at doing that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So what is your, if you look back at the past year, what's your greatest lesson of 2017? Like what are you taking with you that's new and fresh and, you know, into the new year?
Well, gosh, it's such a...
A lot. So many,
there's so many. I would say... One of the biggest lessons.
You're gonna chop more wood, carry more water.
Kind of, yeah. I guess metaphorically, yeah. I guess like physically and metaphorically speaking, like I am okay. So here's something. To be quite frank, there's I was kind of talking earlier about how reluctant I had been in my past to I guess owning up to this responsibility I have, with having said that, I never really got into, playing music or traveling, for that matter, to become like a business person, right? Hmm. I didn't ever want to have to crunch numbers and and deal with, running a small business. But, I'm running a small business now, and and there's people that, who create with me and who work with me daily. And that's an exciting thing to now have manifested and to step into that role, of leadership. And so, as I take, my personal lessons with me that, are certainly, reflected in the songs and in the messaging and in the strategy of how we carry that with us into the world, I'm looking at my year ahead and the years to come from a much more openly vulnerable standpoint of humanness and recognizing that the more vulnerable and open I become with my journey and with my wounds, on one hand, yes, you become more open to attack and to negativity. But when you have a strong core, those things can be addressed I guess, more appropriately. But on the other hand, you know, it does give you a really strong foundation to work from, because you get nothing to hide, you know. And the more that you dig into your own trauma and your own wounding, the I feel like the more power you have. So in moving forward with this year, whether it's with business and trying to just, you know, pay my bills or whatever domestic things, you know, you have to do as you continue to create your art and continue to write the stories of experience, you know, that will help shape a generation. It is, I guess, imperative that, for me at least, to create ritual and discipline in my life, as I spoke of before, so that I feel a truer connection to myself and to who I, and to the man in within me, who is, you know, growing into himself, and, you know, walking side by side with that child that, that does exist within me as well, rather than letting the child be leading me. And so, yeah, reconciling with that child and walking hand in hand with that child, but firmly, you know, allowing the man to be in charge. And that man has to also, you know, be completely open and be able to receive as well as give, and to address the wounds that the child has also inflicted. So I don't know.
In terms of ritual and, you know, carrying this with you to help you ground, what does it look like in practice? Like when you're on the road, how do you stay sane by this
lady, her name's Yoga Girl. And
who's that?
You know, I'm just gonna
I love this voice. Who is this voice?
Oh my God. I have so many different voices that come through me sometimes. It's like so strange. That guy's name is Frankie. Yeah, it's Frankie. I'm just saying, I have all these great teachers I just kind of tap into. Yeah, as far as
yoga
ritual,
on the road.
Yeah, yoga on the road. It's like, it's health and fitness. And it's like, I'm a super active person, whether I'm practicing yoga has been really helpful for me these last couple months specifically, and getting into a daily meditation beforehand and after, and then also working outside is my other thing I do. I love working outside and in nature. And where I live is, I have 6 acres here, and we're going to be building a sweat lodge here soon. And so that's going to be something really helpful for me too, just staying in ceremony and practicing our traditional ceremonies. And then For as far as the heart and the home, yeah, it's like, you know, the inner work inside the house, I guess you could say, or the inner work, you know, as in meditating outside, or ingesting more text, you know, reading more. I have a whole stack of books that I'm like working through right now, yeah.
And
I guess,
how does,
you know,
this work,
like, really,
when you go on the
really
road?
It's
do you
pretty
find
much
that
the same,
when you,
to be honest.
It works
I feel
the
like
same.
My work
Did
on
you...
the, yeah, like my life on the road is actually way more schedule, like it's very meticulous. Like I have this many hours free, you know, and then I have You know, then I got to go do some media stuff, or like at 3 o'clock, I got to go to sound check. And then like at 4:30, I eat my, you know, early dinner, and then we go do the meet and greet. And then it's like, you know, the showtime, and then we eat late dinner, and then we like, you know, stretch before we go to bed, or we call our loved ones. It's like, it's very like, sort of, you know, it's way more scheduled than for say my days at home.
Wow, I'm so surprised to hear that. Is that because that's the only way shit works?
Yeah, that's like for me at least, and how we roll and our crew, that's the only way it works, because otherwise we would probably just be like, well, what are we doing? you know, and
you need,
you know,
a mom
so,
on tour.
Yeah, well, we have a very awesome tour manager who's an awesome female, and she... Her and I are very similar. Like, we're kind of all pretty OCD with how we like run our stuff. And except I wouldn't really say it's a disorder, so I just say we're OC.
I like that. OC, it's good.
Yeah, I'm just being, I'm really OC about things.
oh my God, I think I'm the same. It's not a disorder, it's just a personality trait. It's a way of life.
Yeah, exactly. Just how we roll. The home stuff is definitely new to me, because I've been so uprooted from my home for years. And, even when I lived in LA for like the last 3 years, I really wasn't there that much, to be honest. I was kind of just living in my storage space. But
I find that so challenging. Right now, since I had the baby, travel of course looks completely different, but I find myself living in lives of like 3 month chunks of, okay, if I'm home here, then I feel so grounded and so rooted. And then travels to me now just looks like a blur of madness and stress, and like lugging a baby on the road. And like, I don't know. It's a big struggle for me to continue ritual and routine and discipline. While moving, it's super, super hard.
Yeah, and now, you know, your ritual really is your child.
I mean, that's the one consistent thing. Yeah. Everything else.
You know,
is,
I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, that's the sacrifice and the blessing all at once, right? It's like, okay, now everything sort of revolves, you know, around the ritual of taking care of this little spirit. And yeah, and that's a big responsibility. And yeah, I can only imagine how difficult that is, you know. And I guess my only way to relate to that is the fact that, like, I feel like I take care of 9 people on the road all the time.
9 babies.
And
you have 9 babies.
Yeah, and they're grown ass babies.
But I mean, in terms of astrology, so I did a podcast episode with Trevor Hall a couple of weeks ago, and he really turned me on, like, for the first time. Really, I had my chart read completely after that. And I do readings with his astrologer now, and she told me something so interesting, because she told me, so my chart is all fire, like everything is fire, but I have this baby who's a Pisces, who is like all different, and if it wasn't for her, I would never slow down, and I would like get sick and die, basically. She said, this baby is the only way for you to stop. So just listen to her, and I think it's so, so beautiful and so hard. Oh my God, all at once.
Don't you just love Deborah? She's so amazing. Yeah. I'm so happy that you got to do that. Shout out to Deborah Silverman. And I think that, oh my gosh, so Trevor Hall, the astrologer, like, are you kidding me? Like, this dude is like crushing it. I'm like,
he is.
Like, literally, like, when he started doing it, I was like, okay, yeah, we'll see, you know. And then, like, he read my chart, and I was just like jaw on the floor.
Oh my God.
I'm like, he's so good at it.
So good at it. Yeah. Yeah. And I think he should. Yeah.
And,
career change.
And
second.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. Like, I'll be like, all right, Trevor Hall, the astrologer, like, call his 1-800 number right now. And same with me though, when he started doing that, and, you know, I started seeing how, I mean, I'd already been I'd already sort of like had some kind of knowledge around it, but when he started digging into it with me, I was like, dang, I want to know that stuff. And so, So yeah, right? I'm like signed up for her course. I'm like signed up for her course. I got like
you
I
are. Oh my god, I was like, thinking about doing that. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. This is so no, I'm in. Maybe we'll get in the same class.
you're in deep. Oh my god, I'm gonna join too. Yeah. But it's so because I never really fully believed it, and now that I'm really diving into it, it's so like. Oh my god. Yeah. Well, no, really.
Yeah, well it's once you consider like the fact that, you know, all of our traditional cultures, you know, from all around the world, our ancestors, you know, really understood our direct connection to the stars, you know, and how they relate, you know, whatever moon you're born under or whatever sun, you know, that that those things really have a lot to do with our makeup and how we navigate in life. And, you know, once you're able to put aside the ideas, the structure of us, how we've been told since day one, and you step aside that and sort of start to learn about what seems to be actually far more natural, and what actually is vibrating at your frequency that makes way more sense to me. You begin to open up to a whole different understanding of what life is meant to be about.
And we feel more a part of the whole. At least there's something so intricately beautiful about, wait, the stars were aligned in a certain way when I was born. And it connects, you know, to everything else that moves. Like the whole universe kind of conspired for me to arrive here at this moment in time. I mean, I find
it's literally mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. And I was thinking when I had the baby, she was over 2 weeks. She was 2 weeks late. She didn't want to come out, you know. And I was going through this whole thing. Like she was supposed to be. What was she supposed to be? What's before Pisces?
Aquarius.
Oh, yeah. She was supposed to be an Aquarius. So I had all these, like, you know, friends in the community sent me, like, the birthstone for the Aquarius. And we had all these gifts because she was supposed to be an Aquarius. And then she was born, you know, 2 weeks late. And it came out in this whole other thing that I had planned. But it was so interesting to me now that this was the moment she was supposed to arrive. And it was really life-changing, those 2 weeks. You know, it's... Mm. Yeah, so special, so special.
So
I have a final question. I would love to end on a note to rally the community a little bit, because one thing we haven't touched on in our conversation yet is the work you do as an activist in the world. And I know you're involved in so many different causes and projects, and you rally behind some truly, truly amazing and necessary stuff. Mm-hmm. But someone asked a really interesting question. So, what, from your eyes, what is the number one most important social issue that we all need to band together and strive to change right now?
It's a great question. I think last year I probably would have said climate change because, you know, it really is the apex, right? Like everything kind of meets there, whether it's environmental justice or social justice or, you know, the movement of, right, like of finding the balance for the masculine and feminine, whether it's, you know, education or healthcare or whatever it really is, you know, or protecting, you know, our creatures that, you know, live with us on this planet or all the rest of life, whether it's, you know, our forests or... Whatever, anyway, all, our oceans, you know, all these things that I've done work towards some certain levels and such. It seems as though all roads lead to the climate, and yet now the space that I'm in now, and so some of the things that I'm considering. The strategies I'm considering to be advocating for in the coming years, I think that my push, I guess, is going to be more focused on, I guess, perhaps, inspiring young people to become more involved in politics. Because at the core of it, I wonder, okay, yeah, it seems as though, I mean, our government is shut down right now over here.
Right.
You know, it's still like for like 2 days now. And, you know, literally neither parties can come to an agreement on how they're going to fund us. Right. And, we have like so many black op programs that are taking trillions of dollars from our budgets. And those things aren't being talked about. Whether it's the secret space program or like, you know, all the black ops stuff that goes on in foreign countries, the black market things that are going on. It's like, you know, normal taxpayer people don't even like believe those things are happening. Well, then why do you think that we can't even come up with budgets to like pay for stuff that's like basic human health care and basic like, you know, state-funded jobs, right? So, yeah, our spending is out of control. But I think that there is a growing movement, and there are so many different orgs and that are all run by young people who are inspired and who have now, I guess you could say, karmically come back enough times to be like 60-year-old people inside like 26-year-old bodies and are far more advanced in their knowledge of how the system works than I will ever be. Far more advanced in like, you know, coming up with solutions to our insufficiencies, and our deficiencies, who are focused on greening our economy, in a far more rapid way and hopefully, directing it away. I don't know. This is a personal note, hopefully directing it away from further AI technology, and looking
AI
at
technology,
like artificial intelligence,
technology. What does that mean?
Like the amount of work that's going on in the scientific sector regarding artificial intelligence is a little bit mind blowing. And, you know,
really, I
Hollywood
never hear about this.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I never read it in the news or anything.
I'm kind of a nerd on it. It's like just the fact that like, you know, Hollywood doesn't really come up with these ideas. You know, predictive programming is something that they practice on us like every day with any kind of media outlet, you know, to desensitize us to, as they begin to slowly release this stuff. You know, there's a lot of money spent there. Oh my gosh. Yes. Trillions. Absolutely. I mean, we have technology that's so advanced that you would consider it alien, or back engineered. Right. And, if they just came out with it today, you know, a lot of people would be like, what the heck? Why haven't we cured cancer? Why haven't we solved the issue of the way that we extract oil and our dependency on oil? Like, why aren't we using this new technology? Well, it's because it's all part of a strategy that they're using, that they're working on to, of course, make more money and to have more power and control over the larger amount of people. You know, the one percenters definitely know what they're doing in that sense. I think that, you know, outside of all what people might be considering theories and, you know, maybe perhaps even they might look at it as a negative thing to consider. To me, it's not even negative stuff. It's just reality. It's just like, this is actually what's happening. So what do we do? Well, you know, we have to encourage young people to take office. And we have to get, more conscious people involved who have the big picture in mind, who know that in order for us to even survive on a planet that's you know, rapidly becoming depleted of its resources, that we green our economy, whether it's, you know, whether I personally will focus on, you know, systems that are healthy, I guess you could say, or, you know, whether that's solar or hemp, you know, focusing on stuff that will eventually turn the economy in a good way. And I think that, you know, I think that the consciousness of the majority of people in our nation are wanting to do that, you know, like following the suit of other countries that have, you know, are taking the lead, you know, who are committed to the Paris agreements on, you know, climate reform and going, okay, well, let's actually do this stuff. You know, if we wanted to actually focus on these renewables, you know, we could be doing so much more. But again, you know, you look at obviously what's happening in our government today and just the quarreling about these things, you can see we're clearly at a standstill with the majority of people who are in office, who supposedly represent the people, being in a inactive space because of they're in this entanglement of you know, all facets of the complex, you know, web of politics of how, you know, this nation is run. But if we're like, you know, if we can't even get resources and help people in Puerto Rico, you know, it's like we're obviously right. not even being able to like help ourselves in on a very basic scale.
But how do you stay motivated then? I mean, as a single individual, like maybe a young person listening to this right now, because looking at the state of things, it can look pretty bleak. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it really feels like we are moving in the wrong direction and there's just more and more messed up things taking place in the world. So how do you stay motivated and active to actually, yeah, to act?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me personally, I feel as though that what I spoke about earlier, the ritual and the discipline and like, and what I fill my senses with, you know, you have to balance that out. So the less time you spend on your phone, the better, right? The less time you spend, or the more time you spend interfacing with things that are real, is imperative to not get sucked into the frequency of that state. Now, that's not to say that state isn't real, because it is. And so the more that you become strong in yourself, in your highest self and your consciousness, the more you're able to, I feel like, address the frequency of the world with compassion and empathy. And with that, I feel as though your purpose as an individual about what your service is becomes clearer. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then you don't get carried away with like the fear or the, I mean, absolutely, like you'll be overcome with grief at times and you'll be overcome with frustration at times, but you'll have such a strong core and you've built a foundation and an infrastructure that allows you to step from there and greet the chaos of the world with compassion and clarity. You know, you still find purpose in living because you know, it's sacred. You know what I mean?
Right. And you need your community at your back. That's the thing. If we feel all alone and we just take all this stuff in on our phones every day, yeah, we're going to go into total despair and, you know, there's no future there. We have to connect with other human beings that believe in the same things that we do and rally. I mean, that's why like the marches happening now, you know, it's there's something so powerful and just brings so much life to this cause. As opposed to just sitting at home tweeting something, oh, I support this. Like, you know, you're not going to really act from that place. You need to be out there and march and move and connect and talk.
And it's good to be in conversation and in dialogue with people that don't have your same perspective, because you get to actually practice, you know, compassionate conversation without, you know, and you might get frustrated, you might get upset, but if we don't understand, you know, an opposing view, we don't get to fully understand our own view. And so it's really important that you dialogue with people who don't believe the same things you believe in.
That's true, but it's so hard. And I feel like, especially in the U.S. right now, there's a lot of dinner time, family conversations that took place over the holidays that were really, really, really difficult.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and then at some point you just got to put it down, right?
At some point you got to put it down. Yeah, that's true. My brother yesterday, he sent me as like a sarcastic joke. I haven't spoken to him. He lives in LA. I haven't spoken to him in like 10 days. And he sends me on Facebook an invitation to like the Facebook page, Donald J. Trump. Like, that's it. That's his like form of like, hey, what's up? Fuck you.
Oh man, that's classic.
Yeah, the fun continues.
Just takes one like, Rachel. One like.
Just one like, and then I'm in. I'm there. Oh, dude, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. I have one final little thing to ask. Okay, you can totally say no. Yeah. I asked this with Trevor. I have like, you know, anytime I have someone with music on the show,
yeah,
I always ask if you, only if you want to, would like to sing something for us before we say goodbye.
Ooh.
Ooh, on the spot and everything.
Let me see here. What do I got?
Let me get into the zone.
Let me see here. Oh, yeah, I got something. Ooh.
Oh, yeah, okay. Ooh,
Apple,
okay.
I got something for you. Okay. Can you hear this?
What? Are you kidding?
Let's see. Hang on. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
There is a will, there is a way. There's no room we can make to space. The heart of life, there comes a taste. The medicine that we were meant to take. Say there is a time, a place. But I just can't afford a longer wait. I need a miracle, I need to say. For an opportunity to co-create. Some kind of lesson I don't understand. Some kind of blessing. Always unplanned, but I don't take for granted the gifts from the land. Cause the hardest earned blessing comes from Creator's hands. Creator's hands, yeah, the hardest earned lesson comes from Creator's hands. All right.
No, I'm crying.
God
damn it.
Some kind of blessing. I don't understand. Some kind of lesson. Always unplanned. But I don't take for granted the gifts from the land. Because the hardest earned blessing comes from Creator's hands. Ayo.
Thank you. I love you.
I love you too. Thanks so much for having me on the show. It's been great being here.
It's so great having you. Oh, now back to the couch and the tea. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you from my heart to yours. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Thank you so much to my beautiful guest this week, Knuckle Bear.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. You can find all of these on rachelbraithen.com, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you normally get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review while you are there. We now also have all podcasts transcribed and available for the Heart of Hearing on rachelbraithen.com, so please spread the word. Huge thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work, and of course, thank you to my sponsors, LaCroix, Tripping.com, Third Love, and ZipRecruiter. Please support them the way they support this podcast. I'll see you next week.